Welcome to the Six Ways from Sunday podcast. My name is Ben Wilson and I'm your host. And once again, I'm sitting down with our minister in Basha and the Pinoki United Church, Robin King. And today we're sitting talking over a cup of coffee about a really kind of a different and unique story from the Gospel of Mark, where most of the Gospel of Mark is telling the story of Jesus. And Robin was just explaining to me, just before we started recording here, how there's this few verses here where it tells the story of the beheading of John the Baptist, and it kind of takes a different direction for a few verses. And we're going to be using this story to explore the topic of power and what type of power Jesus had. So thank you for joining us. I think we've got a great conversation in store for you. I don't even know where we're going to go with this. As always, we're just flying by the seat of our pants. We're just seeing where the conversation leads us. So we're glad you're here to join us. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy it. Robin, thanks for joining me again today. Let's dive right into this story in the book of Mark, where we have this really dramatic tale of manipulation and power and control and violence. And like, the Bible is a messy, gory, dramatic book, collection of books. Take us into the Gospel of Mark and kind of give us a context for where this story fits into the flow and kind of disrupts that flow, like you were saying.
Actually, that's an interesting point. The Bible as a collection of books has a lot of really kind of graphic violence and, the Gospel of Mark doesn't generally have that. In fact, the Gospels generally don't have that, except, of course, for the ultimate violence of the crucifixion story. But, and that's what's so cool about this story, is that the Gospel of Mark, it's the Gospel that gives us the phrase, the word Gospel, by the way, because the opening line of the Gospel of Mark is, this is the good news of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. And the book is about Jesus. It absolutely is. And Mark is the one who, it's very sort of straightforward. It's to the point. It simply makes his point. He moves on. And then suddenly we've got like 12 straight verses that aren't at all about Jesus. They're about John. And they're the story of John being executed. And the lead into it is really kind of interesting too, because it's who is this Jesus? A couple of verses saying, who is this Jesus? Well, some people think that it's Elijah. And other people think that it's John the Baptist alive again. Because after all, he was executed by Herod, and that leads into the story. So what leads us into the story is wondering exactly who Jesus is, right? It's a continuation of, I think last week and even the week before and week before, we've been making our way through Mark and hearing all these miracle stories, the calming the sea, casting out demons, all that stuff, and about Jesus not being welcome in his own hometown. And he sends out the disciples in pairs, and they go out to do Jesusing, and what Jesus does. And when this story ends, by the way, we're going to come back to, and then the disciples all came back and told Jesus the cool stuff they did, and off they went together again, right? So in the middle of that, here's this story about John the Baptist being executed, and it's not just, it's not told in typical Mark fashion, which would have been John the Baptist was executed by Herod. Boom. Done.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's an elaborate story of John gets arrested. John gets arrested because he's calling out Herod on the fact that he married his brother's wife. His brother isn't dead either, by the way, but he married his brother's wife, and you know, they're living it up and having, and in typical fashion.
Just to stop you there, that would have been illegal
bad.
At the
that
time.
Is bad. Yeah. That is bad. But also remember too that we often call characters like this, particularly in this instance, King Herod, and he's not a king. In those days, it was not uncommon for the Romans to reinstall a local government once they'd occupied the country. And so while we refer to him as the king of Judea, he wasn't really king.
He didn't have real power?
And that whole, not really. He had the power that the Romans gave him, actually, is what he had.
Right.
Which was very limited local governance only kind of stuff, right? The synagogue also had power, right? As long as the Romans allowed it.
Right. Right.
So all of these people, and even in the neighboring countries, and what would have originally been, you know, Israel, Judea, that whole sort of Middle Eastern dynamic was subdivided by the Romans into little chunks that were then governed by somebody. His brother was a governor of, I shouldn't say governor, because Pilate was a governor. But they allowed kings. See, that's the thing. He's not really a king, but he kind of is a king. He's not really. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of a gray area. He had some standing, let's say.
Yeah.
And he had some authority. He had his own army, as he was allowed, right? Bearing in mind that only is allowed by the Romans. So he had soldiers. And of course, since his power was only what was allowed to him by the Romans, part of his responsibility was, in part, enforcing things for the Romans. But, of course, because he was already now going to be hated by everybody, you know, he might as well buy into that. And so Herod was, you know, not a great ruler of any kind. And his soldiers and his staff would have very definitely not been particularly nice to anybody. But again, let's be clear, the only authority he had because the Romans let him have it. Okay, so
maybe instead of king, he should have been called Warden of the North or something.
That's an interesting that Game of Thrones, because there's so much in this that's sort of so Game of Thrones ish.
There is, because in this story, throughout Game of Thrones, they're constantly fighting over who is the real king, right?
George Martin could have written the story, because of course involves not really incest so much as lustfulness of we'll get to it.
Yeah.
Anyway, but that's an interesting analogy, because of course the in Game of Thrones they spend a lot of time talking about you know, the people in the North recognize no king in the North except Stark, right?
Yeah.
Who isn't the king in the North? He's the Warden of the North, right? Because the king lives somewhere else.
Yeah.
And so there's actually really interesting... Yeah, I think there's actually really an interesting parallel. But so he has the power that the Romans ought to have, and he is now married to a woman who was married to his brother. Her daughter lives with them in the palace, and he is just not, he is the worst example, it appears, of not just somebody who has no moral or ethical standing, but also lives lavishly on the backs of his supposed subjects, right?
Mm-hmm.
And John calls him on this, right? And particularly on the whole married to his brother's wife thing. And that's important to remember, because that annoys Herod's wife more than anybody else, obviously, because she's the one he's pointing at and saying, yep, it's her. Herod, though, it says, actually was afraid of John a little bit, because John was a prophet and spoke out and was
very political.
Yeah, and he literally walked out of the wilderness, you know, sackcloth or wearing camel's hair, and he ate locusts and honey, and he was a holy man, and that made Herod nervous. And so right away here's an interesting comparison of authorities. Herod's authority came from the fact that the Romans let him have some power. That's all. But he recognizes somehow in John an authority of sorts. He's a holy man.
And he's the people's man.
And that gives
man.
Him... Yeah, and plus he's a man of the people, right? And that gives John some authority, some power, that causes Herod to be nervous and afraid. And not in that kind of, oh yeah, that guy's going to be a problem, I should have him whacked kind of way, but in the, I'm not touching him because that's going to be bad for me somehow. I'm afraid of that, right? But eventually... You know, Herodias badgers him into, his wife badgers him into arresting John, and John gets thrown in jail, right? And then comes this story of Salome, the daughter of Herod's wife, dances for Herod. And the implication is that Herod lusts after her so much that, you know, she has to dance for him. And he offers her whatever she wants to dance for him, because she won't. And he's having a party. And the classic, it's my favorite all-time moment of, and I realize my favorite moment in a movie that's about Jesus shouldn't be anything but something about Jesus, but this classic movie, King of Kings. It's from the era of Ben-Hur and The Robe and Cleopatra, the great biblical epics, right? And in King of Kings, Jesus is played by Jeffrey Hunter, who is the blonde-haired, blue-eyed Jesus. It's so wrong in so many ways.
I haven't seen it.
But it's a classic from the era, epic from the era. Jeffrey Hunter was, Captain Pike on the original Star Trek TV show and everything, but he's best known for being the blonde haired, blue eyed Jesus. And in that, this scene of the telling of this, Frank Thring plays Herod, and he plays him as just like, not a buffoon really, but he plays him as somebody who clearly is aware that his only real power comes from the fact that somebody else gives it to him. And he practically drools over Salome. And this whole, like, you can tell he likes the lavish lifestyle. He likes the bling. She dances for him, and he promises her anything. And, of course, she dances very seductively. And at the end, he has promised her anything, so she doesn't know what she wants, so she asks her mother.
What should I ask for?
And her mother says, ask for the head of John the Baptist on a platter. And so she does. And actually, it's interesting in the movie, in King of Kings, he's reluctant because he's afraid, right?
Yeah.
And which Mark doesn't mention any of this, but the way it plays out in the telling of that version of the story, it plays up the fact that clearly he is afraid of John, and not because John has power, and yet he does. But he's clearly still afraid of John. But he of course has to do it because people are watching. It's a party. He'll look bad if he doesn't. So he does, and that's why John dies. In other words, John the Baptist doesn't. He's not executed for doing something wrong. He dies because of petty vengefulness in a completely senseless way. So what's the point of Mark putting this story in? And the only thing that you could even think of around this story is power. It's about power and who has it and who doesn't. Because remember that Jesus, the Messiah that they were expecting, was not Jesus. The Messiah they were expecting, that they believed was coming, was going to lead a great army to overthrow the oppressor and restore Israel to its greatness.
Yeah.
Right? And that was so not Jesus, right from the get-go, right? Born in a stable, poor refugee parents. He doesn't have an army. He's not, at least from all of the stories that were told, we don't know this because we have no description of him. And he was a carpenter, so one might assume he was physically fit in some way, but it doesn't say he was a great warrior, and he doesn't go around fighting people, right? He doesn't have an army. He doesn't have wealth. He doesn't have anything. But he has power.
Mm-hmm.
And how he uses that is with people, not over people. And so here's Herod. The only power he has is given him by someone else. So is he the person with the power in this story? Well, no, he's not. Well, is it Salome then? Because Salome is the one who gets to have her wish granted.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, but no. It's the mother who gets her revenge on John the Baptist for what he said about her.
Yeah.
Very publicly, and embarrassing her very publicly. She gets her revenge. The person, in fact, probably with the least power in this story, of the main characters in this story, is the one who has the most power and gets what she wants. And to me, that's again a reminder. It's like the thing about Jesus not being the Messiah they expected. Power isn't about force. It's not about an army. It's not about, how hard you hit it with a hammer. It's in this story, it's about manipulation. It's about being able to get what you want without actually even having to lift a finger to do it.
Yeah.
It's about influence and all of the worst things about power in a sort of relational way.
Yeah.
Right?
Leverage and...
yeah. Manipulation. It's petty. It's senseless, even. Unless, of course, you're Herod's wife, who it makes perfect sense.
He
insulted me. He should pay for it.
Yeah.
But no, he shouldn't, because he told the truth. And that's the thing about this, is that that act of revenge, the person who had all the power in the story, who gets her revenge, it's because he told the truth. They were in the wrong. They did do something wrong. They were doing the wrong thing. Herod was doing the wrong thing. Mm. All John did was point it out and call them to repentance. You know that thing that Jesus does? He calls people to repentance and to change. He calls us to transformation. He calls us to be better. And John loses his head for that.
And then people start to wonder, like you were saying, whether when later on in the story, whether Jesus is John either back from the dead or...
yeah.
Maybe
right.
Maybe
right.
He wasn't. See, maybe that wasn't his
once
head
again,
after all.
Yeah.
He wasn't actually killed. Here's John again. Like, what? Or, explain that part
or,
of the story.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of a cool thing too, because to me that just emphasizes what that just reemphasizes that Herod should have been afraid.
Yeah.
If he was afraid of John because he was a holy man, he should have been, because mm-hmm. it's John back from the dead. No, it's not. But people were thinking that, right? Yeah. And this is not that story where Jesus asks the disciples, who do people say I am? And they say, you know, you're John the Baptist or you're Elijah. And
right.
then Peter blurts out, you're the Messiah. It's not that story. This is simply the people think that Jesus might be this or this. Oh, and by the way, one of the reasons they might think this is because John was executed and this is how it happened. And once again, reinforcing the fact that this is the kind of power dynamic that Jesus is about standing up to, right? Jesus isn't about assembling an army and going to war with the Romans, or with Herod, for that matter. Jesus is about, and it just, I know I told you I was going to mention this because we were talking about this before, but just as a sidebar here, this and it, like funny little things. Frank Thring's famous claim to fame is that he is the only actor to ever play the two people most responsible for the death of Jesus. He played Herod in this story and Pontius Pilate in Ben-Hur. And again, think about just, I know that's a ridiculous little, and who remembers trivia like that?
Only you.
Apparently me. But think about it for a second, though, is the power dynamics there even. Pilate had, between Pilate and Herod, Pilate's the one with the power. But why does Pilate have power? Because he's a Roman governor and the Roman state gives it to him.
He's been installed.
As it happens, Pilate is not a particularly effective or efficient governor, and he ends up being recalled. And it does not go well.
And in the story, you can tell that he feels powerless. He feels, you know, he says, I'm going
to the story where he agrees to crucify Jesus. Yes,
yeah.
It appears as though he feels like he's powerless to do anything but say, no, crucify him.
Yeah.
He has to give in, right?
Yeah. He doesn't even want to do it. But
the
then
story,
he washes
the story
his hands
of Jesus
and...
is littered with these little thing, these little moments that ought to, like this one, ought to cause us to think about what really is power.
Mm-hmm.
And what is power over people versus power with people. And like Jesus and the disciples, right? Sending the immediately prior to this is a story of Jesus being rejected in his hometown, but then he sends the disciples out in pairs and says, go and share the story. You don't need to take anything because you and the story are enough. You telling and living, showing people how to live, the story is enough. That's all you need.
Yeah.
Just take that. But not everyone's going to hear what you have to say, so move on.
Yeah.
Right? Because, and I always
carry
feel
on.
That, yeah. Carry on. Shake it off and move on.
Yeah.
And I always feel that that's because Jesus knows that even if you don't see that you've made an impact, you may have.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, maybe they didn't hear you, but you might make an impact in the next village, and the people in that village might have some influence with these people in the previous village. That's how, like I keep saying, and I think for like weeks now, the kingdom of God is like a weed, right? Mm-hmm. It gets in, it's like the light breaks in through the cracks, right? Yeah. Through the brokenness and all that kind of stuff. That's how it works. It's not about taking a hammer to it. It's not about putting together an army strong enough to overthrow the army of evil. Mm-hmm. It's not about that at all. It's about addressing where the real power is and taking a stand against that when necessary, and ensuring that people learn from that, that power is exercised with, not over people.
And
that's what Jesus is about.
And when you say people, it's also not about nations or tribes or ethnicities. It's not what's cool about this story, or another layer to it maybe, is that it's a story about power within interpersonal relationships between
Precisely.
A husband and a wife and mm-hmm. and a daughter, and it, like, you know what I mean, it's
relationships are built person to person.
Yeah.
Even if you look at how nations work with each other, the ones that work best with each other are the ones where people have, those nations have learned something about the other nation, and they've learned how to connect. They've made a connection.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's an absolute single-person-to-single-person connection, or it's an awareness of what people are like and finding some common ground. And it's about how you build those personal relationships. And this story is all about how those personal relationships were destructive, not building things.
Yeah.
And Jesus is about personal relationships that share power and build relationships that are life-giving, not destructive.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This story is destructive. John loses his head. And I don't imagine that, I don't for a second even imagine that, though we'd never hear about it later, the relationship between Herod, Salome, and Herodias is ever the same again.
Oh, can you imagine?
Even as they go on, Herod will not ever forget that he was forced to.
Yeah.
He was forced to kill someone that he was afraid of.
And even his wife, how good do you feel when you got what you wanted, but your means of getting there was...
Yeah, that is a good question.
You know what
I
mean?
How did she feel about that?
Like, how she has to live with that for the rest of her life.
Yeah.
That she
got
what she wanted by manipulating
yeah.
and using her daughter.
It would
be really
easy.
Her husband.
And that's I think, a really, really good way of how... When we hear stories like this, we don't know what happens after that. We don't know whether, after this, Herodias felt bad about it and regretted what she did. We also don't know that she felt really thrilled and pleased by it and was so glad John was gone now. We don't know
mm-hmm.
either of that. We don't know whether Salome regretted doing what her mother wanted. We don't know that. We don't know that she was happy with it either. What we know is that it happened. And whatever happened next for those characters in this story, things will not be the same.
Mm-hmm.
And so we might want to think about that. I think we can certainly go in the direction, whichever direction we think that's going to go. I'm sure there's lots of people who go, no, she was probably perfectly fine with it. They probably all were. And the only thing that Herod probably was nervous about was the fact that he didn't know whether this, now John being dead, that's going to come back to bite him somehow. Like,
right.
He's going to pay for that. One might quite legitimately go, clearly he didn't think so, because not much later, he's got Jesus in front of him. And, you know,
and
he's quite
him
happy to send him back to Pilate and have him executed.
Yeah.
Right.
So and then there's Jesus' death. And so through both John's story of the end of his life and the end of Jesus' life through his crucifixion, it's also an example of how their death is not the end of their power, because their story continues to have power as well.
That's absolutely true also, yeah.
There's so many things that we could explore.
And that's, again, that's a dynamic of the kind of power that, it's just, again, a reminder that power isn't about force of arms.
Mm-hmm. It's about relationships.
It's not about physical power. It's about relationships.
And about truth.
And is the power of John that continues, and the power of Jesus that continues, is the power of truth,
mm-hmm.
right? The power of Herod, the power of Herodias, the power of Salome, long gone.
Yeah.
Like, probably gone within minutes even. But, in fact, instantly gone, because you know Herod's not going to trust either of them ever again, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
If he even did to begin with. But still, their power is gone in an instant.
It's
the
an
power
illusion
of truth is what goes
yeah,
on.
Because yeah. that their power was an illusion of power, and it wasn't built on truth. Cool. Well, like I said, there's so many things that we could, so many tangents we could go down, and other ideas to explore from that story. And maybe in the future we can pick up on some of those, but we'll wrap it up there for today. And we've got some other really cool episodes in store for the next few weeks. It's summer. Robin, you've got some vacation planned. I'm heading off tomorrow for a couple weeks, but we've got some episodes that we've recorded that we're going to be sharing. So don't worry about us missing an episode or anything. So keep coming back every week. We'll have a new episode to check out. And as always, share them with your friends. We really appreciate everyone's support in growing this online community through the Six Ways from Sunday website and Facebook page. And of course, risingspiritministry.com is where to find the podcast episodes, sermon videos, Robin's blog, lots of really great content. So thanks, Robin, for this today.
And thanks, Ben.
We'll catch you guys next time.